This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. When Arnold Schoenberg invented the serial or 12-tone method of composition, he thought of it as an evolution of music, not a revolution. He felt that he was simply following in the footsteps of Liszt, Wagner, and Debussy in breaking down the system of tonally centered music that had been the basis of composition for hundreds of years. But audiences and critics were outraged. Many listeners are still outraged today. In Schoenberg's system, every note in the scale has equal value, and if you're looking for traditional melody or a classic progression of musical argument, not having a tonal home base to refer to can be disconcerting. But there were many musicians who recognized the possibilities in Schoenberg's system, in particular his two best-known students, Anton Webern and Alban Berg. What's most interesting, though, is how they took Schoenberg's system in opposite directions. Webern went for the intellectual, composing from his head. Berg composed from his heart and found a way to make Schoenberg's system sing. Berg's own development as a composer, though, was not without its own issues. He studied with Schoenberg off and on for about 8 years, until a short visit to Schoenberg's house in Vienna in 1914 turned into a scene. From the beginning, Schoenberg had been concerned about the fact that Berg seemed content to write in miniatures, when he knew that Berg would only really find his voice in something that involved symphonic development on a large scale. Berg showed his teacher a couple of his short new works, and Schoenberg exploded, basically throwing his student out of the house. But within just a couple of weeks, Berg realized that Schoenberg was right, and began what would become his first major symphonic work, his three pieces for orchestra. In many ways, the three pieces represent Berg's graduation from his apprenticeship with Schoenberg, but they're also clearly influenced by Berg's other symphonic model, Gustav Mahler, especially in the opening preludium, with its homage to Mahler's Ninth, the slow waltz of the middle movement, Reigen, and in the March finale. Berg's flair for the dramatic shows up not just in the music, but also in the written foreword to the miniature score, where an unidentified author writes that the three pieces are what the first piece, with a touch of shy understatement, pretends to be, namely a single preludium, a prelude to a tragedy whose end cannot be foretold. End quote. Preludium begins with soft, unpitched percussion noises. It's a gesture that dozens of composers since Berg have used. Eventually, the timpani enter with actual pitches, and melodic ideas begin to emerge. But even before the melodies, Berg establishes a distinctive rhythm. It's a rhythm that recurs throughout the three pieces, and it begins in the trombone, in the very highest part of its register, and doubled in the tam-tam. The music boils quickly to fortissimo. And after first appearing in fragments, a new melody emerges, and it's a clear homage to Mahler's Symphony No. 9. It comes back in a much fuller texture, but then comes stillness. Berg was fond of arch forms and musical palindromes, and the end of the movement dwindles down to the same gentle tam-tam strokes that began it. The second movement is called Reigen, or Round Dance. In the third measure of Reigen, Berg makes one of the many connections that show up in the three pieces. The celesta plays a sequence of chords that it had also played a dozen measures before the end of the preludium. Reigen gradually makes its way into a slow waltz tempo. And if you think of the three pieces as a sort of crypto-symphony, the slow movement begins with a subtle and almost imperceptible shift from 3-4 waltz time to 4-4 march time. Reigen ends with an accelerating orchestral trill. Berg used a similar sequence at the end of Act I of his opera Wozzeck. When he started writing the three pieces, Berg had just seen the play Wozzeck by Georg Büchner for the first time, and he used these pieces to try out a number of ideas that he later used in the opera. But the last notes of Reigen are a tribute to another groundbreaking piece of theater, Richard Wagner's opera Tristan and Isolde. The final march was the first of the three pieces that Berg began working on in 1914, and it's another tribute to Mahler, particularly the funeral marches of his 6th and 5th symphonies. Berg set out all of his ideas in the preludium and Reigen, so the final march is all about development, variation, and recapitulation. The development builds and builds to what seems like a cacophony. And it takes a hammer blow to finally quell the chaos, another gesture borrowed from Mahler. The recapitulation is all brass fanfares, the heavy footsteps of a nightmarishly slow march, and the shuddering of coolly rising chords. Finally, the music crumbles into fragments, as though it would end in silence. But there's one more fanfare. It's like the one behind the scenes at the end of Reigen, but now it has become foreground, sounded by four trumpets, all the horns in unison, plus the xylophone. It culminates in a huge crescendo and a devastating crash, as if to say, the prelude is over, the tragedy can begin. Even though that 1914 argument between Berg and his teacher soured their relationship for a while, Berg must have sensed that Schoenberg was right about where his true strengths lay. Just as Schoenberg had predicted, the greatest successes of Berg's career came in longer forms. The operas Wozzeck and Lulu, the chamber concerto, the lyric suite, and the violin concerto. The three pieces for orchestra were Berg's first giant step towards fulfilling his musical destiny. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.